Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening, and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, September 11th. And today, a complete low point for Detroit sports fandom. This is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thank you for the listen, and please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for sticking with us this summer, as though maybe the Detroit Pistons organization is the one that will give you hope in Detroit sports fandom this year. We certainly hope so, and but we have to talk about it. We will get into the Lions debacle on Monday night for a minute, and the Justin Verlander return also, what I thought was a shocking and disappointing turnout in downtown Detroit. We're also going to talk about the top 100 list from Sports Illustrated, where I have Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin ranked on my list compared to where SportsIllustrated.com had them in their list, which came out today on Tuesday. We're also going to talk about a new initiative related to the practice facility that the Pistons announced today. This should be a valuable tool for the residents of the city of Detroit. But yesterday, I talked about how the opening weekend of the NFL season is kind of the new sports year in some ways. Well, happy new year, Detroit sports fans, from Monday night. Holy hell for the Detroit Lions right there. I was downtown last night. Actually went to the Justin Verlander return in Detroit for the Associated Press, covering that at Comerica Park. But I was there before the game with a friend of mine at Hockey Town Cafe downtown. Now, first off, I was noticing just only Lions gear with the fans. So it was obvious that it was pregame in the Lions game. No one had the Verlander jerseys on or anything like that. No Tigers memorabilia to be found. And we were on the main floor of Hockey Town, but you could hear the J-E-T-S, Jets, 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 from the top deck, and an ominous sign to be certain. Lots of Jets fans out and about downtown last night, so props to the visiting Jets fans or the New Yorkers who are living in the Detroit area now. But first off, I want to apologize to those who listen to this podcast to get away from things like the Tigers and the Lions, but I think it's on most of your minds today. It's certainly on mine. And before we get to the Lions, what about that crowd at Comerica Park last night, or lack thereof, I should say? I don't know. The park holds 41,000 people. I expected something like 30,000 people there last night for Justin Verlander. This was like one of the five games all season that you'd want to go to. I mean, you got opening day, you got the Alan Trammell celebration, the Jack Morris celebration. Those were in August. The 68 celebration on Saturday, which seemed like a great time. My folks were out there, said it was a good one. Then you had JV's return last night. That's just about it. And I know the 6 o'clock start made it awkward for some folks to kind of, they plan that because of the Monday Night Football games. They moved the start up a little bit to alleviate some of the traffic and some of the situations that could come up if the games were starting right at the same time at 7 o'clock there. But especially as we're living this nightmare together as Detroit sports fans, and go ahead and throw Michigan and Michigan State football in there for this year right now. Thank God for Michigan basketball and to a lesser extent Michigan State basketball right now. And if you're a Michigan State fan, you've got your own kind of problems that you're dealing with morally right now as you follow your programs. But you know, Michigan football getting smashed by Notre Dame on the road. I know that it ended up being a 7-point game, but certainly didn't seem like it as we watched it. And Michigan State can't do anything offensively on the road on Saturday. It doesn't look like either of those teams are going to be competing for anything other than mid-range bowls that they have lately. And so not very encouraging on Saturdays either. But like I said, as you're going through this, as we're going through this, wouldn't you want to go see Justin Verlander and make sure that there were enough people there to give him a proper send-off? Because that's kind of what I was embarrassed for. I was a little bit embarrassed for him. That guy, Justin Verlander, said and did all the right things while he was here as a proud member of the Detroit Tigers. He really became a Detroiter. He did all the right things. He did the things that we care about. And I know that there's going to be other fan bases and maybe even some people listening and some people in our fan base that think this is hokey or something like that. But he said and did all the right things while he was here. He had another one of his veteran events over the weekend here. He was on Instagram last night saying he was nervous about coming out here, thanked all the fans. He always thanks all the fans. Even when he won the World Series with the Astros, he talked about the Detroit fans with Anthony Fenech of the Free Press there, asking him about it and all that stuff. Guy says and does all the right things and seems genuine when he talks about his love for the city of Detroit, the state of Michigan. He reacted emotionally to the pregame video while he was standing out in the outfield by himself. Pretty nice scene to see, but I got to say it was overshadowed a little bit. And he soaked up the enthusiastic cheers from the 19,000 fans who were in attendance announced by the team. But by the way, there were probably more like 8,000 or 9,000 fans who were there when the video was played pregame. And I mean, you look at him watching it, you watch the video of them showing it on TV of him, getting choked up as he's walking off the field. But as I was there, I saw that. But then the next thing you saw was all the empty seats. There was just like nobody there at the beginning of this game, and it was pretty embarrassing. I felt kind of bad for him, and he talked about after the game how it was an emotional game. They got the big ovation coming off the field in the seventh inning when everyone pretty much knew that the strikeout of Jacoby Jones with the runner on third base that could have tied the game was the end of the night for him, and he got the big send off, tipped the hat once again to the crowd, and just it was as if there were 40,000 people there in the way that everyone acted about it and the way he talked about it. But again, it was half full, if that. It was less than half full. Just not a great night for Detroit sports fans, because like I said, if this is what our present is, then why don't we think about and talk about and revel in the past a little bit more? Those good times, all those good times with the Verlander, Scherzer, Cabrera when he was still alive, the Vic Martinez good days, all those Tigers that we loved to watch for all those years that brought us all the joy in the fall. And why can't we relive that if there's nothing else to live for at this moment if you're a Detroit sports fan? Now, speaking of that, the Detroit Lions, it's week one. I know that it's week one. It's just week one, one game, 0-1. But the stink of that game will not go away this season. I don't know. There's nothing that can happen this year that makes that go away. It's the kind of game that says you should probably just give up hope completely on this team this year, because even if they do turn it around a bit at some point this season and get on a little run, you know that that game is part of what that team is, so you just can't trust them at all. Matthew Stafford, a mess. Matt Patricia, what I believe is the next chapter of Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel and Josh McDaniels, brings back Jim Bob Cooter, and it sounds like Cooter is going to be maybe the next one that's getting the wrath of the Lions fans, from looking at Twitter and all last night. But if you're Matt Patricia, you have to own the offensive problems of this team. You brought that guy back. I know Stafford put up numbers with Jim Bob Cooter the last few years, but this was an offense that didn't get it done when it mattered over the past few years. If anything, it was the Lions' defense that overperformed its talent level during the Caldwell years, yet they keep the offensive coordinator around. Now, Matty P., the smartest guy in the room, according to him and everyone else who talks about his background with the Patriots, and his, he's a rocket scientist. I don't know what that has to do with winning football games, but clearly a really smart guy for sure. Maybe not a great head coach, but we'll see. Time will tell. It's tough, and I don't want to get too much into it because I'm in a little bit in the awkward spot of covering this team as a backup beat writer of sorts for the news, and I know it's a different thing than what I'm doing here. I'm in Allen Park sometimes. I have to remain impartial about this team, but if you listen to this podcast, you know that I didn't get the firing of Jim Caldwell at the time, probably never will, and to that extent, didn't understand pretty much the universal agreeance with it of the entire fan base. Everyone was on board with firing Jim Caldwell. It's something that I think we'll look back and laugh about a few years after we go through maybe another stretch of bad Lions football over the next several seasons. Four seasons of Jim Caldwell, 11-5, 7-9, 9-7, 9-7. Two playoff berths in 4 years, the most successful four-year stretch in team history, tied with another four-year stretch that had that 12-4 season in there from 1991. The best coach this team has had in my lifetime, Jim Caldwell. Anyone who is under 55's lifetime, for sure. And he's fired, so we can get this. So a good man, Jim Caldwell, a decent man, a man who was respected in the locker room, led a group of guys who behaved and conducted themselves as professionals on and off the field. No police incidents that we have to read about from the head coach. No naked coaches in the drive-thru at Wendy's. No embarrassing penalties to kill drives in important spots, and just mockery on the field of all the things that we've seen during the Matt Millen era and before that as well. But anyways, we'll drop it for now. It's a long Lions season. I'm sure we'll get into it more throughout the year. And certainly check out Locked on Lions with Matt Derry on the network here. I'm interested to hear what Matt has to say about the game. I did not listen to his post-game take yet or his Tuesday podcast. Excited to listen to Matt and hear what he has to say about that. But give us a follow at on Twitter at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Had a voicemail into our new Google Voice account for the podcast, and it was Andy from Ann Arbor. He called in and pointed out, we talked about Grant Hill getting into the Hall of Fame, the first Duke player to be enshrined into the Hall of Fame. He pointed out that in 2012's Hall of Fame induction, the 1992 Dream Team was inducted as well. And, of course, Christian Laettner was the college representative on that team. So technically, Christian Laettner is somewhat in the Hall of Fame. Now, he's not in as an individual. He's not enshrined as an individual. So we'll kind of agree to disagree with listener Andy of Ann Arbor there. I appreciate the call for sure. But, yeah, Christian Laettner, as a member of the 92 Dream Team, which is in the Hall of Fame, technically there's a Duke presence there with him in there. But like I said, Grant Hill, the first individual player enshrined as himself as an individual who played at Duke, who's now a member of the Basketball Hall of Fame. So again, we'll agree to disagree, but thanks again to Andy from Ann Arbor for the call. Keep me corrected in case we do have any errors of anything we pass along on this show, and we do appreciate that. We will correct the record as we do in the newspapers every day as well. But you can call and leave a voice message or text the number, and we'll use your 2 cents about anything that we're talking about here on the show, especially today's topic of the top 100 players from SI.com. Give us a call. Let me know what you think. 810-666-1546. Again, that's 810-666. Vinny Johnson, Joe Dumars, Terry Mills. 810-666-1546. But the Locked On Network, we are now on college campuses: Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Baylor, Penn State, Oregon, BYU. Go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get podcasts. Follow us for free on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. But up next, we're going to be talking about that top 100 list from Sports Illustrated. 50 through 31 came out, and we've got some stuff to talk about as Pistons fans. But you've heard me talk about advertising, and guess what? We're actively looking for more now that I'm back in Detroit. If your company wants to reach that key demo of men between the ages of 18 to 44, provincial Pistons fans that probably have ties to Metro Detroit and an interest in spending their dollars locally, you should be sponsoring Locked On Pistons. 98% men, 80% of those between the ages of 18 to 44. That's our listeners, all sorts of daily dedicated listeners all over the area, the country, and the world. If you're interested in reaching that group, email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about a new initiative announced by the Detroit Pistons on Tuesday, but I read over the list on Monday, the top 100 list of SI.com, the top 100 NBA players going in to the 2018-19 season. And they released 100 through 51 on Monday. And before I even made a guess as to where he would be, I saw that Reggie Jackson was on the list at number 97 for the Pistons, which to me sounds about right. There's a lot to prove for Reggie going forward with him. It's like, are you getting the 2016 Reggie Jackson, where he should probably be higher on that list in terms of a better placing on that list? Or have the accumulation of injuries that he's had over the past few years, has that taken a toll where he maybe shouldn't even be on the list? Or is he just like washed up and definitely going to get hurt again, where he shouldn't even really be considered for that list? So I thought 97 was kind of fair, the write-up done by Rob Mahoney and Ben Golliver of SI.com, the authors of the list. I thought that was pretty fair. And it got me to thinking, as they were going to release more versions of the list going forward this week, where would Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin be? Certainly they will be in the top 50 players in the NBA. And where would they be on that list? So before sitting down to make my list, I thought, well, you know, we've got 30 teams in the league. Who's the best players? If Andre Drummond or Blake Griffin was your best player on your team, would you feel good about that? So they'd be a top 30, or would they be outside of the top 30? That was kind of the way I originally thought about it. When you think about those things. So I thought probably that Andre Drummond would be among the worst best players on the team. And by the way, I believe that Andre Drummond is the best player on the Pistons. So that's kind of where I started. But he'd be among the worst best players on the team. So I thought he'd be good enough to make the top 30 off the top of my head. I thought Blake was a little bit worse than that, but not all that much worse. Like, if he was your second best player on your team, you'd feel really good about that, as the Pistons should, given that I believe that he is the second best player on the team. So kind of giving off of that and thinking about some of the top players in the league before I sat down and made the list, the numbers that I threw out there were Andre Drummond is the 27th best player in the NBA, and Blake Griffin is the 32nd best player in the NBA. Kind of random, from the top of my head where I thought it would be. Then I actually sat down and made the list. So first thing I did was I came up with 24 names that I had ahead of Andre Drummond. And again, I was starting with Andre Drummond because I believe he's the best Piston. So everything that I was doing for the first part of these lists were based on Andre Drummond comparisons. So like I said, I made 24 names that I thought were no doubters, where these people are better than Andre Drummond. And then I got to a tier after Gordon Hayward at number 24. I got to a tier where you could reasonably put Andre Drummond and all of those listed players in that tier. And I actually added Blake Griffin to that tier too. So I made a tier of here's guys where you could make an argument that Andre Drummond is better than these guys, or you can make an argument that Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin are worse than these guys. And that list went on and on, and it went on going for 22 players. I think that basically what I'm saying is Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin, you really couldn't reasonably put either of those guys in the top 24. So 25 would be the highest that you could put either of those guys. But then when I made my list, I got down to the bottom of names where I don't think you could reasonably put anyone above Andre Drummond or Blake Griffin. So that list spanned from 25 to number 46. So like I said, 25 being as optimistic as you could possibly be about those guys, and 46 being about as pessimistic as you could possibly be about those guys. When I actually wrote down the list and where I put Andre Drummond and Blake in that tier, I ended up having Andre Drummond at number 31 and Blake Griffin at number 42. So actually making the list, as opposed to coming off the top of my head, Andre Drummond dropped when I made the list from 27 to 31, and Blake dropped from 32 to 42. I just had a lot more names in that tier that I liked a little bit better than Blake Griffin. Now, when I put this list together, it wasn't a lot of research. It was kind of off of a lot of feel about how would I feel about having that guy on my team as opposed to Blake Griffin. Now, I might share this list with you guys if you ask, but for instance, it was pretty casual. I got to number 17 on the list as I was making my list, and I tried to go in order, obviously, and then I remembered that I'd forgotten Kawhi Leonard, because I had a list of last year's stats in front of me, and I was kind of using that to jog my memory of names. So obviously I had to put Kawhi up to the number 4 spot on my list and bump everyone down a number there. But for reference, like I said, I had Andre Drummond number 31 right below Jason Tatum, who was number 30, and right above Goran Dragic, who was number 32. For Blake Griffin, I had him at number 42, just below Clint Capella, who was 41 on that list. And after I made 42 Blake, I stopped listing after that. Now, Sports Illustrated, they had their list, and it came out today in terms of 50 through 31. And I figured that, Blake would definitely be on the list, and Andre would probably be on that list too. Unlikely for the national media to put Andre Drummond higher than I did on my list. And if I was making the list and putting it out day by day like they did, then Andre Drummond would have been number 31, the top player on today's list. But they had Blake Griffin, by the way, better than Andre Drummond. So Blake Griffin, they had at number 41, the best player on the Pistons, actually one spot ahead of where I had him at 42. So Sports Illustrated likes Blake Griffin one spot better than I did for Blake Griffin. Andre Drummond, the second best player on the Pistons, according to Sports Illustrated, number 46, 15 spots lower than where I had him. And it's interesting. And again, you expect this as a center. You expect this as a Detroit Piston. Let's face it, we're Detroit Midwest teams in a small market in terms of how we're perceived throughout professional sports, how I believe anyway. And like I said, my tier was somewhere between 25 and 46. So they had him at the very bottom of what I thought the tier that you could reasonably say that where he belonged. Now, some of the players that I had in the tier above on in the tier alongside Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond are guys like you know, Devin Booker, who was below Andre Drummond, even on their list at number 50. But they had a few guys listed above Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin that I didn't even have in the tier of players that I thought you could reasonably argue were ahead of them. Now, two of them are teammates from the Denver Nuggets, Gary Harris and Paul Millsap. Gary Harris is a guy, and we talked about, he's a Michigan State guy. He's a Midwest guy, too. We talked about him throughout the season as a guy who gets disrespected, and then I went ahead and disrespected him by not putting him in that tier. He's very productive, and he's just a guy who gets it done in all areas of the team in a sound way. So I didn't have a whole lot of argument with that. But they brought up his teammate Paul Millsap in the Denver Nuggets at 33 years old, a guy who's coming off of a major injury for his wrist. And the write-up on him talked about him kind of being a shadow player, a guy, a complimentary piece. And I just thought when we're making a list, we're talking about guys in the top 50, I would, as opposed to a super complimentary player, I would still rather have a guy who's an impact player on hopefully both ends of the court, certainly at least one end of the court, like Andre Drummond is with rebounding and the way he does things defensively for some aspects and offensively for some aspects as well. I don't want a guy who's really good at getting out of the way and letting other players do their thing. So I disagree with Paul Millsap as a super sub who's now 33, maybe entering another phase of his career, which isn't going to be a great one for him. Like I said, I disagreed with having him above Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin there. Another couple of guys that were interesting on that list ahead of Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin, Otto Porter of the Washington Wizards, a guy who, man, we're still kind of waiting for it, aren't we? It's a guy who was a high draft pick coming out of Georgetown, hasn't quite shown it. He overachieved as a three-point shooter, not this past season, but the year before that. I haven't seen enough from Otto Porter to think that he's a top 50 player in the NBA. The other one that's going to cause controversy, especially when compared to Andre Drummond, is DeAndre Jordan, now with the Dallas Mavericks. One that's a lightning rod, and I know Laz Jackson is out there on Twitter. I retweeted him from the Locked On Pistons Twitter account today. He's out there kind of making that argument. It's a common argument that's made, and you could talk about it until you're blue in the face, the Andre Drummond versus DeAndre Jordan argument. But I just feel like Andre Drummond does rebounding a little bit better than DeAndre Jordan, and basically has a little bit more of a skill set, a little bit more of a toolbox than DeAndre Jordan, a little bit more of an upside in terms of a defensive player going forward as DeAndre Jordan, you know, enters into a little bit older side of his career. His best days as far as an athletic presence might be behind him. I don't see that he's adding parts to his game as Andre Drummond did this past season with the way he worked near the perimeter, the way that he expanded his passing game. And now the essay article did a good job of noting that, or making the argument that some of the things that Andre Drummond was adding to his game wasn't necessarily beneficial to the Pistons overall as a team when talking about things like net ratings and some of the other more advanced stats that they had compared to what the team did when he was adding some of these things. And I would argue that, you know, the Pistons didn't have a whole lot of other options. So they weren't going to be good regardless offensively, especially with the personnel that they had last season. So, you know, interesting to see. And those are arguments that are ongoing. I want to hear what you guys have to say about this. So get in touch with me on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Text us at the new voicemail message, 810-666-1546. Or leave a voicemail there. Give us a text at the new Google Voice number for Locked On Pistons. Again, 810-666. Vinny Johnson, Joe Dumars, Terry Mills, 1546. 810-666-1546. But we're going to have more about that as we go throughout the week. I want to hear from you guys. Maybe we can even have a segment with some of your reactions on it. Where do you think Andre Drummond, Blake Griffin, and Reggie Jackson should be on the list? And even, you know, when you think about it, if you got 30 NBA teams and you got 100 players, you'd expect the average team to get, you know, 3.3 guys on that list. So for the Pistons to have three guys on that list, we're right in the middle, right as an average team. According to them, Blake Griffin being a below average player for your best player on your team, Andre Drummond maybe being above average player for your best player on your team, or your second best player on your team, and Reggie Jackson being, you know, below average there, just slightly below average for your third best player on the team. The probably the worst part is if they put together a list of the 101 through 200 players in the league, the Pistons might not even have anyone on that list. Maybe one guy, a Reggie Bullock or something like that, towards the bottom of that list. So really, talking about ranking the top three guys on the Pistons in terms of where they rank throughout the course of the NBA, that's something that would be favorable to the Pistons according in comparison to other lists that maybe you could put together when ranking the rotation guys and the starters for the Pistons. So really, best case scenario for where the talent level of the Pistons are is a ranking of 1 through 100, because you're probably going to get your top three guys on there, whereas 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, that's where the Pistons are lacking right now in terms of their overall talent level. But like I said, talking about a new initiative announced by the Detroit Pistons today that should help the city of Detroit. We'll talk about that next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Your Pistons had a press release out on today, September 11th, on Tuesday, and I'll read the first couple paragraphs so we can just talk about it briefly here. The Detroit Pistons, The Platform, and Chrisman Brinker today launched a new partnership with SkillSmart to create a workforce development system for the Henry Ford Detroit Pistons Performance Center, helping not only connect Detroit residents with good-paying jobs, but also giving them valuable work skills. Utilizing SkillSmart technology, Detroiters will have direct access to workforce opportunities created around construction of the new state-of-the-art practice facility and team headquarters located in the new center area. And for Detroiters requiring additional training and skill development, the City of Detroit's workforce development arm, Detroit at Work, will provide Detroiters free job skills training. So hats off to the Pistons for, through the construction of Little Caesars Arena, the Illich Group had to pay some fines for not having enough of a Detroit workforce in there. So it sounds like the Pistons are maybe this is a little late. I don't know. Maybe this is a little bit late in the game. Maybe we'll talk to some of my friends over at Crane's Detroit Business and see how this is going, if this is a reaction to some similar problems that maybe they're having as the Pistons build the new performance center, the new headquarters that the team will have in the new center area just north of the Little Caesars Arena in downtown Detroit. But we'll find out. I mean, is this something that they had to put together because they were reacting to some bad numbers that they're having in terms of having Detroit residents being active in the construction of the facility? But sounds like they're at least making steps towards getting more Detroiters involved, and not only for this project in particular, but for growing the workforce and growing the skills development of the overall workforce in the city of Detroit. So kind of a hats off to the Pistons for that. But like I said, we'll dig a little bit deeper and see how the numbers and the construction and how things are coming along for the practice facility and new team headquarters, which, by the way, should open up in terms of being available for the community and for the Pistons going into next season. So not this season, but the season after this one, as far as I know, should be full bore and ready to go on schedule for the season to start next year. So I know Pat Caputo was interested in hearing about that, and they talked about that at the Dwayne Casey introductory press conference, and Tom Gores and Pat Caputo kind of had that back and forth, as you remember, a little bit earlier on this summer. But remember, the Detroit Lions, I know that you want to vent about them. I will be, after I finish recording this podcast, I'm going to be listening to Matt Derry of Locked On Lions to see what he has to say about that pathetic performance on Monday night. Check it out on the network, the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. But like I said, give us a call, leave a voicemail, send a text, let me know what you think about the top 100 list, 810-666-1546. Vent about Detroit sports, however you want to use the line. Get in touch with me on Twitter as well, Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Check out the Facebook page, Locked On Pistons-MattShook. Give us a like on there. Get in the conversation. We can get through this, Detroit sports fans. The Pistons are a couple of weeks away from training camp getting started. We got games coming up in the preseason variety October 3rd. Season starts middle of October as well. So we're getting there, and we'll get there together. But thanks for joining us. This is your host, Matt Shook, saying thanks for listening to the Locked On Pistons podcast, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, everyone.